All right, everybody, and welcome to the Hangout in the Holy Land, the official podcast of LandGrantHolyLand.com, your free premier resource for all things Ohio State news and Ohio State athletics. I am your host, Matt Brown. You can follow the site on LandGrant33 on the Twitters and follow me at MattSBN, and you can shoot me an email if you have questions or show ideas or any of those things that cannot be expressed within the majesty of a single tweet. At matt.brown@sbnation.com. Thank you all here for joining us. We are recording this show on the afternoon of July 2nd, so we will have something for you as you drive to your 4th of July barbecues and enjoy here your beautiful three-day weekend, which we celebrate with barbecue and by blowing things up, the most American of traditions. But the past couple of days, we've actually had a little bit of Ohio State news, which is kind of a surprise, and here as we're in the deep doldrums of the offseason. And here to help break down some of those news stories and also take a couple of questions here from you, the listeners, is one of our Land Grant senior writers and our friend and Buffalo enthusiast, Mr. B. Lees. How you doing, buddy?
Great. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing awesome. So the first thing I want to talk to you about is the kind of the thing that Ohio State internet is blowing up with right now and may very well be talking about as we move here into the weekend. And that was this morning, something that was kind of buried in a Tim May story. I don't think anybody really took notice of it when it first came out a day or two before, about how Braxton Miller is just about all healthy, and he's going to say something in some sort of format next week regarding his immediate future. And I think I speak for you as well, and most of Ohio State reporters, Ohio State internet, thinking like this probably isn't a big deal. Everybody has said Braxton Miller is coming back, but the rest of the internet has taken this as a sign to start up again the Braxton Miller transferring to X Engines. Do you think anything has changed here? What do you think is going to happen? Is there going to be a press conference? What do you make here of Braxton Gate?
I think it's a lot to do about nothing, you know. Just that it's being, like you said, the dead season, you know, any little thing will get people going, you know, talking about it. But we've been hearing for so long that Braxton's coming back, and it's, to me, it just seemed weird for him to be transferring at this point. Not that it's unprecedented with Russell Wilson doing it in late June when he went to Wisconsin, but I mean, it just seems, if he was going to transfer, I would have felt like he would have done it by now. Now, maybe it's sort of like a position change. That out of anything, that might be what I expect the most. But even that, sort of, I'm not thinking that's going to come out of it. But I think it's just a lot to do about nothing.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking, too. I imagine the most likely thing would be just a 3-4-sentence statement that he sends to Jerry, who's Ohio State Sports Information Director, and that gets sent out saying, like, my immediate plans are I have progressed through my rehab, I'm healthy, I look forward to competing at Ohio State. Potentially a position change, that would surprise me a little bit, especially now, but you're right, and we've said this time and time again on this site. I've said it, and you know, every time a radio person asks me about it when I'm on there, the timing for leaving now doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, given that there's not a whole lot of time for him to learn another playbook. He has a child in Columbus. He's a notorious home buddy. In terms of like schematic fit, this is probably the best place for him. I mean, we got to keep talking about it because people keep clicking on it, and I like it when people click on our website so I can buy diapers for my daughter. One thing I'll say this for sure: by next week, I'll be very grateful that he'll finally say something, because Braxton hasn't really talked to the Columbus media in a while, because then I can finally stop talking about this.
Yeah, then we can move on to maybe getting on to other subjects. I mean, we're going to be talking about the quarterbacks until Urban comes out and actually names one, but at least it'll be nice to officially know that, you know, all three are in the fold there, and we can go forward to that, maybe projecting, well, continue trying to project who's going to be taking the most snaps for the Buckeyes this year.
Yeah, I got a sneaking suspicion we're going to be talking about the Ohio State quarterback situation until Ohio State season's over. Every time someone throws an incompletion, I'm like, I don't know. Would JT Barrett have thrown an incompletion? Let's talk about it. And I'm not going to necessarily look. I'm not saying this pejoratively. I'm not casting dispersions or judging anybody, because I run an Ohio State website, and I can't deny that potentially an article like that might appear, especially if Ohio State loses in the first month of the season. But that's going to happen, and I guess let's all just sit down and be ready for that. The other thing that I wanted to talk to you about, and I'm admitting here that I actually did not listen to this all the way, but did you hear Harbaugh's Cowherd segment?
Actually, yeah, I was driving to work yesterday, and it was so bad it almost made me want to plunge my car into the Scioto River. So, like, I listened to it just because I figured, oh, this is going to be horrible anyway. And it was even worse than I could have imagined.
So real quick here, for both my benefit and maybe a couple of people who are listening here who just know that this was terrible and don't really know why, can you kind of explain a little bit what made this so bad or what they talked about?
Well, in Harbaugh's case, what he didn't talk about, because all of his answers were pretty much like 2-3 word answers. He was just giving the bare minimum in terms of answers to Cowherd. And not that we can blame somebody for not wanting to talk to Colin Cowherd, but yeah, you know, it is a chance for him to sort of, you know, talk to, you know, his program gets a little, you know, free pub, I guess you could say, and that never hurts. And he brought nothing to the table, really. I mean, some of the questions were a little confusing. From, like, one of them, Cowherd asked, is the Big Ten a bye? And at first I was thinking he was saying bye week, you know, like as in they were weak. But
yeah, or we're talking about Rutgers, sure.
Yeah, but he was saying as in, like, buy or sell. Are you buying the Big Ten? And he didn't understand that. And then it was just really bad radio.
I have a soft spot in my heart for awkward interviews. I have been on both sides of that situation, but, you know, occasionally being that awkward interviewer, getting some really dumb or unprepared questions. But what seems confusing to me is, you know, everybody kind of knows what Cowherd is, right? Like, I don't listen to him. That's not really a shtick that appeals to me. But I also don't really listen to a lot of sports media, to be honest, that comes outside of SB Nation, since I spend so much time doing that. But you kind of know what it is ahead of time. And if you don't want to talk to him, or you want to be weird, and we all know that, I mean, listen, we all have Twitter.com. We know that Harbaugh's a weird dude. Why would you go on at all? It would make much more sense just to say, nah, I'm not interested. I'd rather, you know, tweet pictures of my dad bod while recruiting in Colombia or something, or whatever it is that Harbaugh's doing. It does seem very strange, especially doing it now when we are obligated to talk about it because there's literally nothing else going on but Big 12 expansion.
Yeah, and, like, it's in the past. After he took the Michigan job, he went on Mike and Mike, and that interview wasn't great to listen to either. So you know that he's not great to listen to, but you sort of got to have him on because, you know, Michigan, well, they were a national power, but they still moved the needle. So, you know, moved the needle in there. So Cowherd gave him a chance, and maybe Harbaugh was having a bad day or something, but the history is sort of going against him.
Yeah. We all have bad days. Obviously, in the big picture, this doesn't matter at all. But in July, when our Michigan, you know, does something stupid, we can enjoy it because it's it's some pretty awkward stuff.
Yeah, and then even Cowherd coming out and saying, if I just listen to their interview, you know, and I'm choosing between Michigan and Ohio State, you know, I'm going to Ohio State. Now, not that you really might not want Cowherd on your side, but yeah. You know, anybody, you know, listening to that, obviously Urban, you know, he's got, you know, more energetic. Well, you know, at least he can speak better, you know, yeah, in that way. Yeah. You know, it just makes, you know, his bad interview sort of rubs off on Ohio State in a positive way, which I don't mind.
Sure. Any little benefit you'll take. I'm not sure if I would necessarily categorize Urban Meyer as somebody that has, like, irresistible charisma or really an excellent interview. I appreciate that after having to listen to a lot of Jim Tressel press conferences, Urban Meyer will actually answer questions. there's certainly a magnetism around him because of his intensity, I think, or how successful he's been. But he's not Mike Leach. Like, I'm not going to go talk to Urban Meyer and hear about Saskatchewan or Pirates or something, or some kind of crazy thing. But definitely more compelling than it seems that we heard yesterday.
Yeah.
The other kind of thing, this dropped a couple of days ago and we talked about it, but since you are much more of an aficionado about this sort of thing than I am, you are definitely the man I want to talk to you about this. And this, a couple of days ago, I believe the Golden Nugget, one of the bigger Vegas books, released a pretty comprehensive list of win totals for over-unders. Throughout the country, and I want to talk about this a little bit. Ohio State's is obviously super high. It's at 11.5. So you're basically having to bet whether the Buckeyes are going to go undefeated, and since they're favored in double digits in every single one of their regular season games, I mean, that's not terrible. But there were a couple other ones looking through here that kind of surprised me a little bit. I'm wondering what you think about Ohio State at 11.5. I think the posted odds now are minus 180 under. And maybe some other win totals that jump out at you as being kind of strange or bets that you know that you would really want to take.
Yeah, first off with Ohio State, yeah. You know, the 11.5, it's obviously with everyone that they got coming back, it seems like that'd be pretty attainable. You're going to have to pay a lot. You know, say you pay 180 to win 100 on there. So not only do you have the high total there, but you also have to pay a pretty high juice. But with their schedule, it seems like a pretty good bet on there. You know, so even without me being a homer, you know, I probably would still go over because it wouldn't surprise me in the least for them to run the table. The one that really stuck out at me, Penn State, they're at 8. Now, James Franklin, he's got the program going in the right direction there. And with their non-conference schedule that they have Temple, Buffalo, Army, and San Diego State. Now, there you can pretty much, you're looking at probably 4 wins in there.
Yeah.
And with the talent they have coming back, I know Hackenberg had a rough year last year, but you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all for him to bounce back, especially when you got Deshaun Hamilton and Geno Lewis coming back at wide receiver, Akeel Lynch at running back. So there's a little more clarity. And last year, there seemed like Penn State had about 3 guys who they used at running back. And then they have a lot on defense coming back too. So it wouldn't surprise me for Penn State to go over 8 wins. Also, Illinois at 4, sort of, you know, it seems a little low for me. Again, you know, looking at the non-conference, Kent State, Western Illinois, Middle Tennessee State, you know, those are games that they should win. They probably have a tough game against North Carolina coming up, but with everything that program's going through, you never know with that.
Yeah.
And then they also have Wes Lunt coming back at quarterback. Before he got injured last year, he was playing pretty well for them. And, you know, if he gets back to being completely healthy, you know, that could help him as well. They did take a hit with Mike Dudek being out for the year with a torn ACL. And they also have Josh Ferguson coming back. So, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all to see Illinois go over 4.
I'm glad you mentioned that because that was actually the biggest one that jumped out to me, too. I'm not sure, but there's a quarterback right now in the Big Ten West that's better than Wes Lunt. Like there's a lot of uncertainty there. There's a lot of turnover, a lot of new coaches and changing schemes. The line I have, Ferguson, maybe his box score line doesn't jump out at you, but he's somebody who projects to be pretty explosive and relatively limited carries. You have a lot of people coming back. And you mentioned, pretty manageable non-conference schedule. Their crossover games are very hard at Penn State and Ohio State. They should get dump trucked in both of those. But you're telling me that they can't beat Middle Tennessee, Western Illinois, Kent State, Purdue, and potentially, you know, beating Northwestern and Soldier Field? Or beating Iowa or Minnesota, and those are both on the road. But I wouldn't be shocked if Illinois could make a bowl game. So 4 games, looking at that seemed relatively low as well. And that the other one that was notable to me. I'm not necessarily sure I disagree with it. In the Big Ten, at least, it's Minnesota at 6. Now, Golden Gophers, reigning Big Ten Coach of the Year. Back-to-back 8-4 seasons. They're actually recruiting for Minnesota is concerned, a relatively decent clip. And there seems to be some momentum around that program. But they're playing. I mean, I realize they've got TCU, I think, in their non-conference schedule. And they lost their running back. They lost their number one wideout. But going 6-6 would be, I think, perceived a pretty significant step back. It's certainly possible. They have to go to Ohio State. They have to play Michigan. But I think if they go 6-6, people would consider that a disappointing year for the Gophers.
Yeah, especially after one of their best seasons in school history that they had last year. They do lose David Cobb at running back, and he was a big part of their success last year. But I mean, they should be able to find somebody to at least make up some of that. And they had a pretty strong defense last year, too. So, if anything, I was thinking maybe they'd be closer to 8 wins. You know, like you said, 6-6 would probably be a little more of a disappointment.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's certainly possible. I think a pretty noted Minnesota skeptic. And particularly one who has kind of made fun of Jerry Kill a little bit. I don't think he's bad or anything, but Yeah, I mean, I have their schedule pulled up right now. They're hosting TCU, who should be able to beat them. They have a difficult game at Colorado State. That's a rising mid-major program, returns a lot of talent. Even though with the new coach, they could lose that one. So I guess 6-6 is possible, but it would be I think a pretty big change. Were there any outside of the Big Ten win totals that jumped out at you as being like, that doesn't really kind of match up with my perceived expectation of this program?
On that, I would have to say USC at 9. They have so much talent coming back on there. And with the Oregon and UCLA, obviously, they have a lot to offer, but they are breaking a new quarterback. So, you know, you might see some lag. They might not be quite as good as they were last year. And USC, you know, seems like they're on the rise. They should be back in the mix for at least a BCS game there. So 9 does seem low to me on that end.
Yeah, I wonder if 9 is more of a, we recognize there is a ton of talent on this roster. We still have concerns about depth, and they're also still coached by Sarkisian. Mm-hmm. You know, who is somebody that I don't think has really given anyone a lot of confidence that they're, you know, he can lead a 10 or 11 win team. Probably still going to overrate them a little bit. Yeah, that's one. The other one that looked at me was Georgia Tech, which is, you know, returns a lot on defense, returns their excellent option quarterback that just absolutely carved up the conference last year. I understand their schedule's a lot tougher. You've got Notre Dame, Florida State, and Clemson all on your regular season schedule, along with Georgia, and Notre Dame and Clemson are both on the road. But they're only at 7.5, and this is a team that will probably start in the preseason top 25 and should be expected to contend for at least an ACC division title.
Yeah, and with Georgia Tech, with them running the triple option, no matter how much talent you have, you know, on the opponent side, that's still so hard to prepare for. And it seems like Paul Johnson, you know, he finds a way to get Georgia Tech at least close to being in the ACC championship game. If he doesn't get them there, and you, even in some of his worst seasons, it seems like they're maybe 7-5 in that area. So 7.5 is, or 7.5 wins is definitely attractive to go over.
Yeah, that would be my bet if I was a betting man. I am not, because I write about sports for a living and therefore don't have enough money to
potentially. And you have a kid too.
And I have a kid, which leads me to what I thought was the most interesting reader question that we got. We got a couple of these, and always, if you are listening here and have a question, shoot us a tweet, shoot us a Facebook message, or hit me up at matt.brown@sbnation.com. Our friend at our SB Nation Georgia blog, Dog Sports, asks, who would you rather babysit Little Brown? Cardell Jones, JT Barrett, or Braxton Miller? Now, I know that you do not have a child here, but just I'm interested hypothetically in kind of your argument here. If you had to trust an Ohio State quarterback to babysit, say, a 10-month-old, who are you going with?
I would think that JT Barrett would be the best choice. Cardale, he seems sort of a little more off the wall on there. And I don't know if I'd want – nothing wrong with him, but I don't know if I'd want, you know, somebody that, you know, crazy to be babysitting my kid. JT, he seems like he's a lot more even keel on there. And then he can step in tough situations too, you know, where stepping in for Braxton and, you know, taking control – pretty early on. Not that Cardale didn't do that against Wisconsin, Alabama, and Oregon, but you know, JT just seems a little more even keel.
Sure. So the wrinkle here is that I think Cardale Jones and Braxton Miller actually have small children, so they have experience with this. They mm-hmm. both presumably know how to change diapers, which in my experience is a, you know, probably one of the two most important things when you're babysitting a little kid. That being said, though, I'm also going to go JT Barrett, because at least with my daughter, I think there's a 50-50 chance that she's hanging out with Cardale Jones for 3 hours. By the end, she's babysitting him. And while I would appreciate that Cardale would probably help teach my little Penny some NCAA skills, because I'm trash at that game, I'm sure they'll hook up and he'll beat her by 800 points. I think that kind of even-keeled maturity. You know, he's not going to do anything rash. JT Barrett's got great decision making. He's going to know when to hand off the baby to go to bed. He's going to know how to protect her here when she decides to go crawling into the toilet or the garbage can. He's got that great field awareness. I appreciate the escapability of Braxton Miller. I appreciate the ability to chuck my daughter into apartment three buildings down. That may be a useful thing too. I think I would go with JT Barrett as well.
And also with the shoulder surgeries Braxton's coming off of, we don't really want him holding a baby either. You know, we want to protect that.
Good point. You definitely don't want somebody who's injury prone, because the worst thing that could happen is that if you hurt yourself, you're on the ground, and then the baby's crawling away, and you can't get her, because who knows what kind of mischief she's going to be able to get into.
Yep.
Yeah. So we got a couple other questions here. Here, this is from our friend Christian Zelastra. At Christian MZ24. I'm sorry if I butchered your last name. I'm illiterate. And Christian asks us, which freshman do you think would have the biggest impact for Ohio State football in 2015? This, I think, is a bit of a difficult question if you're looking for true freshmen, because given how young Ohio State was last year, there's really not very many places to get on the field at all, since they're returning so many starters. So I would not be shocked if maybe only three or four freshmen for next year don't redshirt at all, and I would be a little surprised if any of them play a really significant role. I'm gonna go pull up the list here real quick. I would guess perhaps either Hilliard or Cornell, who have a chance to either participate on special teams or with Cornell potentially get in the mix for the defensive line rotation if he's able to move inside a little bit, since there's some space here at defensive tackle. But anywhere else, I think that would surprise me a little bit. Do you think I'm missing anybody here?
No, my thoughts on that too were Cornell came to mind, just because in the past couple of years, Urban has said he hasn't been the happiest with the defensive line depth.
Yeah.
So, you know, him possibly stepping in and making a little bit of an impact on the defensive line, you know, that would have been, out of all the freshmen, true freshmen, that would have been my best guess in there. Like you said, Hilliard, I was sort of thinking Hilliard too, but they do have tons of talent on, you know, linebackers. So it's like you said, special teams would probably be the best option in there. You know, it's not anything where I really see him doing too much in terms of, you know, on defense, just because at linebacker you got Perry, McMillan, Darren Lee. So yeah, immediately Cornell popped out to me, but other than that, not too much.
The only other really one that I can think of is that there's a potential for Michael Weber at running back to be able to crack the rotation. If one, something happens to Briante Dunn, who is likely to be a true backup and get some carries here in short yardage situations or in some of these perhaps early projected blowouts. And if Meyer is serious about having Curtis Samuel really not take very many carries out of the backfield and work as more of an H-back slot kind of player, it seems weird to think about it. There's actually not a ton of depth at running back, you know, especially if Warren Ball is not in a position where he can be a reliable ball carrier. It would not be impossible for Weber to beat some people and get third or fourth in that depth chart, which means that he might be able to see the field a little bit. But, I mean, they were kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel a little bit.
Yeah, and then probably the same thing with Weber. You probably, if you see him out there much, it'll probably be, you know, closing out big wins in there. You know, it's not going to be like where we had Ezekiel in his freshman year, you know, starting to create some waves. But I mean, that's, you know, if we don't see Weber too much, that means Elliott and possibly Samba are doing their job great, and that's more than fine with me.
Yeah. I'm not sure that there's a ton more possibilities, even if you go into redshirt freshmen.
Mm-hmm.
I know the staff is relatively high on Paris Campbell in terms of raw speed at wideout. There may be some redshirt freshmen who are going to be able to come in and crack the two deep along the offensive line. You might see some Jamarco Jones. But I mean, there's the guys from the 2014 class, I think they're likely to really contribute. Saw a little bit of time last year. I don't know if there's anyone that's really to jump up. Is there a name that steps out to you?
Well, just because you heard about them a lot last year and they were trying to find a place for him, I'm wondering, it'd be interesting to see what happens with Sam Hubbard.
That's a good point.
Because they were, you know, Urban was saying, this guy's so good, we got to try and find somewhere to get some way to get him on the field. But in the end, they didn't end up, so he got the red shirt there. So, I mean, if he could make some waves maybe on the defensive end, that'd be great, especially it would maybe give Bosa a little bit of time off in there, you know, have him at peak, when he's out there, or even give him a combination of the two where you got Hubbard and Bosa creating havoc in the backfield. Another name that sort of you heard a little bit about last year was Johnny Dixon, too. So I'm interested to see what he's able to bring to the table.
Yeah, there are a lot of interesting young playmaker possibilities at wide receiver. Probably the starters, I think, are relatively set. But there's probably a mix of four or five people who could potentially come in there and contribute. And it's going to be fun to see what happens there. And I think it may also be interesting to see what happens next offseason, because I suspect that might be the most crowded depth chart really on the team. And if people were looking to transfer out to see playing time, and I don't have any juice here, I'm just talking. I would say that a wide receiver leaving would not necessarily shock me. But yeah, Dixon's very interesting. Hubbard is a fascinating, I think his story is fascinating in general. You know, started I think as like a Notre Dame lacrosse commit, and then he's kind of been pegged at like four different positions. He's like this physical beast. I know the staff loves him. Eventually, when he sees the field somewhere, I would expect him to be a big deal.
Yeah, especially with how much we heard about him last year, and he really never stepped foot on the field. So,
yeah, that's kind of been the way it's been with this coaching staff. Is the the coaches will talk up some of these guys, and I'm undoubtedly certain that they're very excited about a lot of freshmen. Given the way that Ohio State's recruited over the past couple of years, it would be difficult not to. There's high four stars on the two deep at every position. But then when you get kind of into the nitty-gritty, it can be really – and you have so many of them. It can be difficult to kind of figure out a way to fit them on the field positionally. And at the end of the year, like, oh, man, we probably should have played some more younger players. Mm-hmm. Given the way – barring significant injuries or suspensions, it would surprise me to see a lot of freshmen and redshirt freshmen coming in. But again, who knows? We're just talking here. A lot of weird things happened last year.
Yep.
I got another question here for you, and this one made me think a lot as well. This is from our friend K.A. Ashur, and says, if you are Ohio State, which team from the West scares you the most, if any, and why? Ohio State plays Minnesota and Illinois during the regular season. I'm going to go out on a limb and assume that those are not the teams they would potentially face in a hypothetical Big Ten championship game. Do any of those scare you?
The only one that, and it's not even really that much scaring me, I guess maybe the best team out of there is going to be Wisconsin. We don't see them during the season. Chances, if all goes as a lot of people are thinking, we'll probably see them in the Big Ten championship game. But even then, I'm not all that worried. They lost Melvin Gordon. Corey Clement, he's shown flashes of being able to take over the reins there. But, I mean, there's just Ohio State just has so much talent coming back from a team that already laid the woodshed to Wisconsin. So it doesn't really concern me too much, especially with sometimes when the coaching change takes a little bit of time for Paul Chris coming in. It could take a little bit of time for everyone to get comfortable there. So I'm not too concerned about anyone coming out of the West there.
Yeah, there's multiple teams that I think have some upside here, but all of them have some pretty significant flaws. Wisconsin going through a new coach, albeit one that's very familiar with the program and running a similar system, so perhaps there's not as big of a change there. But you're losing, you've really had instability and poor performance at the quarterback position for several years, and there's not anybody on that roster right now who's likely to come in and really elevate their play. They don't have depth at wideout. They're replacing a couple of people in their front seven, and obviously they're all world running back, although Corey Clement is really good and I think should still be more than serviceable. And Nebraska is having a coaching change, a pretty significant change in their offensive structure. There's going to be some hiccups there, I think, and there's worries about their secondary. Minnesota, we've talked about. To be perfectly frank, and this is not a team that I'd be worried about in a hypothetical Big Ten title, I'm worried about Illinois, and here's why. Ohio State plays at Illinois on November 14th. That is after a home game with Minnesota. And then right before, back-to-back games against Michigan State, which is the biggest game on this schedule, and it's going to be a national TV game and could potentially even be moved to a night game, and then at Michigan. So if there is a spot on this schedule where there is a chance for an emotional letdown, it's probably that game, and that's a team that, at the very least, should be able to score. Their defense might be a dumpster fire, but they should be able to score some points. And so, like, if Ohio State has a trap game on this schedule, I think it's probably either that one or at Rutgers, since that's coming right after an emotional night game at Penn State, and that'll be at night, and there's going to be there'll be a lot of people there. But it's also Rutgers.
And also with Illinois, in the past, Ohio, more so during when Tressel was in charge, but you know, you did have some letdown games at Illinois, and obviously they don't have quite, they might not have quite the talent, you know, like, well, Juice Williams, that was the Ohio, when it was in the Ohio Stadium. But I mean, sometimes they've struggled against Illinois, especially there, you get the weird wins and everything. And Illinois might have a chip on their shoulder with all the controversy they've had in the off season, you know, so to them, this is probably going to be their Super Bowl game. So they really could get up for this one and keep it closer than many think.
Yeah. Yeah. At that point in the season, they're playing for Beckman's job too. Because I imagine Illinois is not going to be comfortably in a bowl with all of the huge amount of controversy surrounding the entire Illinois athletic department. You know, there's this huge lawsuit going around with their women's basketball team. There's some concern with other coaches. You might have a different athletic director then. Like, you know, they're going to need to get at least 6 wins, and even that might not be enough. So there should certainly be some emotion there. I guess that's the team that I'm most concerned about. If there's in a Big Ten title game, I on paper right now, I think I might like Nebraska a little bit more than Wisconsin. You know, either of those teams are capable of beating Ohio State if the Buckeyes play poorly. I'm not terrified of either of them. But I think Illinois is a more dangerous team than Minnesota during the regular season.
Yeah, especially with Minnesota coming here. That should even help even more. Yeah. You know, you get the home field. Probably not going to be as close as it was last year in Minneapolis. But yeah, Illinois, Champaign's always just a weird place to go play.
It's a weird place. I mean, have you ever been there?
I've never been there.
It's a weird place in general. It's very flat. It's very windy. It's kind of like backcountry, I guess. You know, kind of the whole Big Ten West outside of like Madison and Minnesota. There's weird things happen out there. It's funny because like there's a lot of teams in that side of the division that Ohio State has really just dominated, right? Like Minnesota. I'm 28 years old. Minnesota has beaten Ohio State exactly one time since like I've been alive, or at least old enough to remember football, like since like 1992. Northwestern has won one time since I've been born. Ohio State has really dominated. You think about Wisconsin as this big rival. Ohio State's won, I mean, I think Wisconsin off the top of my head's won maybe 3 times in the last 15 years, 4 times. Like Ohio State still dominated that series. And even though the win-loss record for Ohio State Illinois is decidedly in the Buckeyes' favor, we can both consciously remember multiple times when Illinois has beaten Ohio State, including when times when Ohio State's been much better.
Yeah, I was even at Ohio Stadium that one year when they lost to Juice Williams in there. And that was very fun.
Yeah, not great. So I guess if you have to worry about something, that would be the one that I have here. I think that's about everything I've got here in my mailbox. Are you doing anything fun here over the weekend?
I'm going to be watching the U.S. Women's National Team. Hopefully, of course. Getting some revenge on Japan and bringing home the World Cup on Sunday, and hopefully some plentiful grilled meats on Saturday to celebrate the birthday of America.
God bless America. That sounds great. I think I'm gonna try to go hiking on Friday or Saturday. Take the kid, get outside a little bit, because you know I kind of look at this right. Like I've got 3 months when I can like actually go outside and be outside, away from my laptop as much as possible, because as soon as that football season starts, and then really from there until the end of March Madness, like
yeah,
really, I'm kind of limited. So we'll try to do that, and obviously eat a bunch of grilled things. What's your go to barbecue food?
You can never go wrong with burgers. You know, nothing like nice big juicy burger in there. And you know, sometimes I like to do up some, you know, chicken on the grill. So you know, both those simple but when done the right way, you know, better than ever.
It's pretty hard to screw up a good cheeseburger, man.
Yeah.
It's for, you know, all kinds of encased meats, those are welcome in my house. Mm-hmm. They are delicious, but I'm with you. You get a good burger, the right cheese. I prefer horseradish myself, but there's a slew of other good accoutrements that you can put on there. That's great. I mean, can't go wrong. Yeah. All right, my friend. Listen, this has been a pleasure. Thank you for taking the time here to chat with me. Real quick, where can the good people on the internet find you on Twitter or the other things that you're writing?
Well, they can find me at BLEEZ17, BLEEZ17. That's where you find me most. on there, and then writing for Land Grant as well. So ramp it up during the college football season with weekly gambling post and some other things. And so, yeah, pretty much Land Grant and on Twitter.
Hey, that sounds great. Thanks, buddy. That's our friend B. Lees. Listen, we have a wonderful weekend here. Thanks for chatting with us.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. I look forward to reading your next bits of gambling wisdom.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. And that's our friend here, Mr. B. Lees. We appreciate here his wisdom. Thank you again here for listening. We'll be back at you here with more information here over the next coming week. The opening is coming up. That's like the big recruiting Super Bowl. We'll have some information there. We've got the NBA Summer League coming up. There's lots of Buckeyes who are we playing there looking to get on teams or boost their own stature. And obviously more summer recruiting news as Ohio State looks to improve upon its 16-man class. It's currently ranked third in the 247 composite. Thanks for listening again. I am Matt Brown. This has been the Hangout in the Holy Land. Thank you. Enjoy your weekend and go Bucks.